Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Ruth E. Walker. Each week, we visit with authors, editors, publishers, or others involved in the writing business who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about their lives, what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us. We're very pleased to have Ruth Walker with us today. Welcome, Ruth.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here, Felicity.
Ruth is an award-winning writer. Her first submission won Canadian Living Magazine's 1996 Story Contest. With poetry and fiction in Canadian, US, and UK journals, Ruth hasn't looked back since. Her novel, Living Underground, is in its second printing. She's a sought-after editor and playwright and popular workshop leader. And next month, Ruth will host a writer's retreat at Elmhurst Resort. So, you do so much editing, writing, coaching writers, running retreats, delivering workshops. When do you find time for your own writing?
Well, actually, I don't. Not properly, at any rate. It's a true struggle to find time. But I do find that the editing and the coaching and the writing workshops, they're all part of a process for me that helps me develop further as a writer. I learn from that work, whether it's doing the research and revising material for workshops, because you always want to be fresh, even if it's something, a workshop that I've given several times. If I'm coaching writers or editing their work, I learn from both the things that they need to work on as well as from their strengths. Those are all things that I can turn around and apply into my own work. I'm also in a critique group, and I would say that that group has had a significant effect on me as a writer. So the time that I spend in the critique group critiquing other people's writing and presenting my own work has been incredibly valuable. And I'm also a woman who has a life. I've got a husband, children, grandchildren, pets, cottages, etc. You know, I need
to
live my life.
You're just used to doing about 100 things at once, right?
Well, yes, and the truth is I don't have enough time for my writing, and yet I work at making time for my writing, and some of that may involve actually going on retreats of my own.
Sounds like a good idea.
Right.
Your historical novel, Living Underground, was published in 2012 and went into second printing. Now, where did that story come from?
The gem, or the center of that story, novel, came from my own childhood. We lived in Scarborough. We had a basement apartment, and we had a whole series of tenants that would come through, which was very common. But we had this gentleman, a German immigrant, who was very stern, and I met him a couple of times on the stairs, and the only thing he ever said to me was Fräulein, and that was it. You know, and he was terrifying, actually, in many ways. But once a week, I would help my mother and go in and clean the basement apartment. And there wasn't really anything to clean. Thing is, he had no possessions. There was nothing that spoke of a life. There were no books. There were no magazines. There were no photographs. There were no knickknacks. There was nothing other than these clothes that were hung with precision in this closet coat rack, and his shoes that were lined up and shined and polished, and you could have put a ruler to the toes of his shoes, and it would have been, you know, a straight line, an absolute precise straight line. And even as a kid, I remember thinking, who lives like that? How does someone live like that? And I knew it was very different and wrong. And I remember my mother, one time we were in there cleaning, and she looked down at, like, she looked first at his clothes all hung up perfectly, down at his shoes, and she said, military. And then she paused and she said, Nazi. And that, wow, that just stuck with me. And even though the guy took off after probably 6 months, and I think like most of our tenants left without paying the rent, the last week's rent or whatever, he stuck with me. He was like gum on the bottom of my shoe, you know. I couldn't get rid of him. And I didn't start writing until I was in my late 30s, early 40s when I really started to write. And I thought, well, you know, I'll write a short story about this guy. I'll make up his life. I know nothing about him, but I'll make up his life. And in that process, the book came. It was like an ever-ready bunny. It just kept going and going and going. And eventually I had a novel.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your other activities. Are they all connected to Writescape? Please could you tell listeners about this company you co-founded? What does it provide for writers?
Okay. Well, to answer your first question about other activities, much of what I do in writing is connected with Writescape, but I have other areas in my creative life that are outside of the business. For example, this fall, I'll be a judge in a creative writing contest for the Niagara-on-the-Lake. I like that idea of judging contests and being objective and bringing the editor's eye to the process. I've won writing contests and I've administered writing contests as well. So
you've taught workshops win one, haven't you?
Yeah, in fact, on June the 17th, I'll be doing that workshop with another writing colleague of mine, Dorothea Helms, and it's called Write to Win. We'll be doing that in Halliburton and the Minden Public Library.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that
yeah.
would be fun.
So about Writescape, that's the company that I co-founded with Gwyn. When I first started to write, that's when I first met Gwyn. And we certainly became friends and writing colleagues and, in fact, did a job share together as senior writers and editors in the Ontario government. But we also would go as writing colleagues to attend workshops and to go to writing retreats, and some of them were a little less successful than others. And we gave some thought to, well, if I was doing this retreat, I would blah, 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 right? And so all of that germinated the idea, and we decided we would hold a retreat ourselves, and that was so successful that that was the beginning of Writescape in 2008. We decided in creating our retreats that we would structure them the way we would enjoy a writing retreat. We would create writing retreats where all the writer would need to do is to bring their toothbrush and an overnight bag and what they were working on, and we would take care of the rest. So we would be looking for places that had built-in inspiration. So that would include both the locations and accommodations, and as well, excellent dining, because you need to nurture your body and soul. And then we eventually brought our workshops and our coaching and editing under the Writescape umbrella, and as well, we've been doing corporate writing workshops and editing services, and that's all under Writescape. It's our philosophy that is the same each and every time. We offer the kinds of supports, resources, and environment that we would want and expect for ourselves. To us, it doesn't matter what level of writer they are or the kind of writing that they're doing. We know that they're all on a journey, and when they choose to have part of that journey with Writescape, our task is to honor that by listening, asking questions, and leaving room enough for the writer to make discoveries and to find inspiration. Escape to Write with Writescape is more than a tagline. It's really our ideal.
Yes, and they are splendid retreats.
Thank you.
They do offer those very important supports to any writer.
Lovely.
So how about reading to us?
The first thing I'm going to read is a poem that I actually wrote while on retreat at Spring Thaw. We have the two main retreats, spring and fall, Spring Thaw and then Turning Leaves. So I wrote this poem during Spring Thaw, and it was a challenge put out by Writer's Digest. It had to be 10 lines, and each line had to have 10 syllables. What I did with the poem is in each line I used a number from 1 to 10. Or a variation thereof. I think that's why they really liked it. It ended up being one of the 10 that were actually published in Writer's Digest. It was spring, and the ice was out of the lake, and one thing and the other, and that's where Spring Thaw came from. So, Spring Thaw. One loon's call thrums under my on-fire skin, wakes the blood just beneath, releasing two heartbeats on the verge of triumph over this morning's slow wake in Lakeside Quarters. Five ghosts from last night's failures dog me close. 60 draws near. Out there, islands shrink and rise at the mercy of seven locks. Down and upright, eight more tighten the screw. And here, the ninth line will carry my song. Decades of tremolo drifts from the lake.
Thank you, Ruth. That's
okay. And then on to Living Underground for something rather different. And I'm just going to read the prelude, the overture.
Fine.
Okay. They were the only family on all of Lilac Valley Crescent with a basement apartment, kitchen, living room, bedroom, and dinky little bathroom, just a shower, for rent, fully furnished. The last tenants bought a few paintings and a secondhand brown rocker recliner, skipped out one rainy Thursday afternoon, took the paintings but left the chair. Between tenants, Sheila's job was to give the place a quick wipe-up. Got to show nice, Sheila. After running the mop and dust cloth around, there was time for the hi-fi and the recliner, rocking and rocking to the top 10 hits. Above, shuffling footsteps or kitchen chair scrapes belonged to another place. She imagined living there, playing music as loud as she wanted, the Beatles or the Beach Boys, stacks of records, 45s and LPs, and guests, lots of guests. She'd cook for them, wash her own dishes, even better, have a maid. She could read Fave or Vogue all day. Sometimes she stood in front of the tiny bathroom mirror, piled her hair on top of her head, pouted, tried on sexy, oh, Mr. Bond. And sometimes she slow danced around the small square living room, eyes half closed, watching her shadow glide over the walls and the furniture. Papa danced with her like that, high up in his arms, his face laughing, her little girl fingers touching his stubble. She almost could hear the music, and then her mother's voice, Tony Barnes, put Sheila down, you're making her dizzy, for Christ's sake. Between tenants happened a lot. Her mum said they had to be more quiet. People were downstairs, and they all had to close doors, not slam them. They couldn't yell, and the TV sound could not go past the mark scratched beside the dial. But people kept moving out. Mostly, it was when no one was around to ask for the rent. One day, her mum would see that she was too grown up to share her bedroom. It was going to happen. Her mother was going to tell Sheila that she should have the apartment instead of strangers who skipped out. Sheila would just have to wait for the sign, and then she'd know.
Thank you, Ruth. Now we'll take a short break.